With Inspire Podcast, we're dedicated to bringing you the latest research in medicine, dentistry, veterinary medicine, and everything in between, from both students and academics in a language everyone can understand.
If you want to get in touch, please email us at inspiredjournalpodcast@gmail.com. You can find our website at www.inspirestudentjournal.co.uk, where you can access original research and articles from students, or find out about how you can get involved.
Hi guys, welcome to the Inspire Podcast. It's Halima here, and I'm joined with the regular hosts Ellie and Natasha. We also have the pleasure of being joined by Kui, who is a Bristol dental student who's just finished her intercalation year and will be helping us do this dental-related episode today. How is everyone?
Yeah, good. I'm on holiday this week in Pembrokeshire, so that's fun, just for the weekend. Going to do some surfing. I think the weather's a bit better than it was yesterday because it was raining a lot yesterday, so
yeah.
That was sad, but high hopes for today. The sun's out so far, so we'll see.
Fair enough. And Natasha, what have you been up to?
Not too much. I mean, I technically finished my last year placement yesterday.
Yay!
So I'm excited.
That's exciting.
I have officially started summer. Freedom has arrived back till for another 2 months before I'm back in uni, but I'm excited. So, yay!
Cool.
What about you, Halima? What have you been up to?
I have had some drama with my housing for next year, or for the next academic term.
No.
So my tenancy ends on the 30th of June, and my new place that I was meant to start was the 1st of July, but it's been pushed back to the 1st of August. So I've had the last like week or so to try and find housing for a month, because obviously I still haven't finished my degree, as in like this academic year. So yeah, that's been really fun. A lot of emails and calls, and with COVID, even university residency has just been really difficult, even to get some like accommodation there. So yes, it's been stressful. I'm okay now.
How come they pushed it back a whole month?
I think they had to do some compulsory sort of renovations to it to make it I don't know, I think the landlord just needed to do some changes that they hadn't yet done, and they only recently found out. So that's been fun.
Oh, that's
but
so
you
horrendous.
So we signed a contract, but there was, but because of like it being considered compulsory, like safety sort of like it sort of negated that. So
Yeah,
almost. It's like a nice property. I'm not living in like a dingy like dump. Before anyone thinks that. It's like a nice house with like my the group of girls that I'm living with. It's just like the one sort of like, you know, like the one piping problem that needs a couple of weeks work, do you know what I mean? So yeah. How about you, Kui? You said you'd finished your intercalation, haven't you now?
Yeah, I finished my intercalation, so I get a really nice long summer, which is so great because I haven't had this in, like, since first year.
Yeah, I can imagine. What did you intercalate in?
So it's called Clinical Sciences.
Okay.
And it's basically just like medical research. So it's all like the cutting edge new stuff, which might make it, might not make it into practice. But yeah.
Fair. What was your like final project or like dissertation on?
So I did mine on a dental topic because I wanted to take on something to do with dentistry. So it was on molar incisor hypermineralization, which is like this developmental condition which some children are born with, and it's basically like they have quite poor quality enamel, so that's the top layer of your tooth, and that makes them more susceptible to like dental decay, and because like the enamel is such poor quality, they also experience like lots of like pain and sensitivity, and often these teeth are like quite prone to breaking down.
Oh, okay.
And they're not, as a consequence of that, often extracted quite early on. And they're adult teeth, so it means that if they're extracted early on, they won't have that adult tooth for the rest of their lives, essentially.
Fair. I like how all the non-dentists were just like casually nodding to pretend that we kind of understood. But you explained that pretty well, thank you.
As I was talking, I was like, oh gosh, there's a lot of things that actually like, yeah, it's normally termed MIH for short. And it's just like a word we could throw around in dental school. But then I was like, I can't just throw this word out there.
No, I completely agree. I think like we've all found it with our degrees as well, that there's so many specialised terms that we've like learnt a whole new language, it's almost like. And only people in that degree will understand.
Yeah, literally.
That's so true. I think we have, like we always joke about, we have acronyms for acronyms.
Yeah.
Like in medicine. It's ridiculous. Sometimes I look at the clinical history of someone and they'll have a bunch of acronyms and I'm like, what does this mean? And then you ask the doctor and they'd be like, I don't know. And they'll ask someone else and no one knows basically what's happening. It's really funny.
The premise of this episode was just to explore some sort of dental myths or questions, common questions that, you know, a layman would have about just like oral and dental hygiene in general. And Kwee is going to be our sort of expert for the episode. So does anyone have a question that they want to kick it off with?
I definitely do. Because this is, I saw this one. And I was like, yes, this is one that I want to ask. Do you brush your teeth before or after breakfast? And also as a little random one, mouthwashing, do you do that before or after brushing your teeth? So like what's the ideal morning brushing your teeth routine?
Okay, so it kind of depends on what you have for breakfast, but the safe option would always be to brush before breakfast. And like loads of people think, oh, like why would I brush my teeth before breakfast because they're already clean from like the night before. But the idea behind it is you basically like give yourself a dose of fluoride, which stays in your saliva, which acts as a sort of buffering system for when you have food. It basically like buffers the acidity or the alkalinity of that food. So keeping your mouth pH neutral, which makes it less prone to decay. So if you brush after breakfast, and what I was saying was like, it depends what you have for breakfast. So if you have fruit, for example, you're recommended to wait half an hour before brushing, because if you have a piece of fruit, within that half an hour, your tooth is more susceptible. It's basically like if you brush straight after, you're basically like wearing it down, so causing like tooth erosion and tooth wear, because that tooth, it has become like softer due to the acidity of the fruit. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's super interesting, because I've always been a person that brushes my teeth before breakfast. Like as soon as I get up, I can't even function or talk to anybody before I brush my teeth, just because I feel really gross. But there actually is some like science behind, because everyone else was like, why don't you just brush it after you've eaten? Surely that makes more sense. So it's to do with the fluoride barrier that kind of protects your tooth. So is that kind of the same with mouthwash then? Because some people mouthwash after they brush their teeth, but I've also seen some people mouthwash before they've brushed their teeth because of the fluoride, so you don't like wash it off. Is that true or is that like a myth?
Yeah, so another rogue thing. So loads of people tend to wash their mouth after they brush their teeth, and that's completely like contradictory, or like it basically like so if you wash your mouth, whether it's mouthwash or water, after you brush your teeth, you basically dilute the fluoride concentration that you've just given yourself through toothpaste and brushing your teeth. So we as dentists always say spit, don't rinse, which like is actually like not widely known about, which is quite bad actually, because yeah, you actually really don't want to be rinsing your mouth after you brush your teeth.
Yeah, no, I only found that out like recently, but actually it's only come more prominent within like the med school, talking about like dental hygiene in the sense of don't rinse, your mouth after brushing. So that, yeah, that's quite shocking how many people don't know about that. And actually, I noticed when I brush my teeth, having pieces of fruit after, like, it has that weird, like, tingling sensation in my teeth. I don't know about you guys. Like, or, like, orange juice or something like that. It just doesn't feel right.
Orange juice after brushing your teeth is horrible. Like, for that reason, I would never have it for breakfast.
No, yeah.
Are you guys a before breakfast or after breakfast toothbrusher?
Oh, I'm definitely
a before.
That's only, but mine
good
is
natural instincts. I rate this.
Yeah, it's purely because the bathroom is closer than downstairs. So, like, I'll brush my teeth before I go downstairs, that sort of thing. Before you went to dental school, Queet, did you have good, like, dental height? Like, did you have, like, a morning routine? Did you know these things about, like, these common things about dentistry or not? Did you have to, was that something you learned?
I definitely feel like I've learned a lot of, like, basic dental hygiene in dental school, but I actually already had quite a lot of the habits already. I've just been, like, brought up brushing my teeth before breakfast. And also, because I'm a really slow eater, I would know that if I brushed after, that I would just end up rushing or missing it. So having it before, I would just never miss it. And so I've always done that. But yeah, I'd say there's a lot of things that I've learned at dental school, which, like, flossing and interdental cleaning, like, I have gradually implemented actually after learning about it, because before that I didn't actually floss, or clean in between my teeth.
That actually brings on to one of my questions. What is the evidence of flossing? Because we always recommend it to do so, but what is actually the evidence behind it?
Yeah, so...
what is the evidence behind it?
So flossing comes under the whole, like, umbrella term interdental cleaning. And it's interesting because everyone like only really talks about flossing when actually, like, do you know what TP brushes are? You know, those, like, interdental brushes.
The small ones.
The small ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always find, like, old ladies have them in their handbag.
I have them in my handbag.
Oh, God, Ellie.
Yes, Ellie, I like
them. Who are you calling old? Who are you calling old? Halimi. Halimi?
Halimi. You call me Halimi? That's a classic.
That's actually such a cool nickname, to be fair.
I'm going to call you Halimi from now on. I'm sorry.
Okay. So you're saying the TP,
So those TP brushes.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no one actually talks about them at all. Like, everyone seems to go straight to the floss, and everyone says, oh, I don't floss. So I always find that interesting. But yeah, so looking at the evidence, there's actually been a Cochrane review, like, comparing different studies, which have basically compared toothbrushing alone to toothbrushing with interdental cleaning, or, like, different types of interdental cleaning. So some have looked at these TP brushes, the interdental brushes. Some have looked at floss, and some have looked at, like, wooden sticks, and, like, rubber cleaning sticks, and, like, these other sort of irrigation systems. So, like, the evidence basically... like, the studies are kind of, they weren't the strongest of evidence, and they are, like, prone to a lot of, like, human factors, because essentially, like, it's them trying to comply to a toothbrushing regime. But anyways, like, the study found that interdental cleaning does reduce the plaque levels. Do you guys know what plaque is?
Yeah, I think we do. But if you want to generally describe it, yeah, for the listeners, then go for it.
Okay, so plaque basically is a sort of, in layman's terms, is like a sticky sort of layer which adheres to your tooth after. So it's basically like, oh, this is really hard to describe. So, it's basically like the sticky product which bacteria make after digesting the food, which adheres to your tooth surface. And that, as that accumulates, it basically increases risk of, like, dental decay and periodontal disease. also gum disease. Sorry, I'm chucking out all these dental terms.
Sorry.
You may need to cut some of this, and I may need to like redo it. But yeah, so the biofilm is made up of like bacterial products and bacteria itself. So yeah, so cleaning this like this off basically, like will prevent you from having like decay and gum disease essentially. And so the studies found that interdental cleaning does reduce it compared to toothbrushing alone. But also they found that interdental cleaning with TP brushes was slightly more effective than using floss. And I think the reasoning behind this and what we're taught of dental school is that with floss, you're basically like running a piece of string through a gap. Whereas if you use those TP brushes, if they're properly fitted, you should feel a bit of resistance and a sort of slight tug back. You shouldn't be like forcing the TP brush through, but it shouldn't also be sliding through. It should have a bit of resistance, which kind of tells you that you're actually cleaning those two surfaces between your teeth, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, that's very interesting.
So I guess like is I guess like flossing in the general term is to try and get to the surfaces that your toothbrush doesn't get to remove plaque. Am I right in saying that?
Yes, exactly. So if you're brushing your teeth with just a toothbrush, your tooth is a bit like a cube or like a box minus one side because of the root. So you've got five surfaces to brush, and essentially with a toothbrush you only reach three of them, which is like your tongue side, cheek side, and like the top surface. So you never actually touch the in-betweens, which is why your sort of interdental cleaning is so important.
So should you be interdental cleaning every day then, every time you brush your teeth? Or is there just once a day, or how many times?
Yeah, so it is recommended that you do it like every day, at least once a day, I'd say, at night time, because that's when you've had your whole day of food and stuff can get stuck in there, like the plaque has accumulated and all of that. So brushing it, like interdental cleaning at night, is the most effective, but also doing it in the morning isn't going to hurt either.
Okay.
So what would you say is like your ideal, dental hygiene routine?
So ideal hygiene routine, I guess, would... So I would leave the mouthwash out and just clean your teeth, because like we were saying, like you want to spit, don't rinse, and you want to leave that high fluoride concentration in. So we tend to recommend mouthwash like throughout the day. So like after meals and stuff. So focusing on the morning routine, I would brush my teeth. So you want to be brushing for about 2 minutes. And also, so I use an electric toothbrush with a round head. And they have shown studies which, so manual toothbrushes and electric toothbrushes are like, they can be equally effective, but for that to happen, like the person has to basically have like perfect brushing with a manual toothbrush for it to be as effective as a electric toothbrush. And you want to be brushing in those like little round circles that your hygienist will tell you to do. But yeah, so I use an electric toothbrush, and it also has like a buzzer for when it's like finished 2 minutes.
Yeah, I think a lot of toothbrushes do that now, actually. They're a bit more pricey than just the normal, just like plain one. But there are some like toothbrushes which are, you know, fairly cheap on the stores, which you can do that rather than buying like a whole like electric toothbrush set. That's time.
Yeah, it's definitely really useful.
Mm-hmm.
And also, yeah, I think a lot of people don't actually notice how long they actually brush their teeth for unless it's timed.
Yeah, because 2 minutes seems like a long time for what you're actually doing it for.
Yeah, definitely. And something I also think about when I'm brushing my teeth is I split my mouth into like four quadrants, and I would take each each quadrant at a time to work on it. So I would first clean like the outside, and then I'd clean the inside, and then the surface of my tooth.
Okay.
Because then you don't miss anything, because if you're just scrubbing like all of them, you can quite easily miss a few surfaces.
Should we also be cleaning like our cheeks and our tongue when we brush our teeth?
Yeah, I haven't really heard about people cleaning their cheeks, but definitely your tongue, because it holds quite a lot of like bacteria and stuff.
I clean my tongue every day, and I always like end up almost, if I clean it, it's a bit too much, like coughing, because I've gone a bit too far back, and everyone's like, "Are you throwing up?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm just cleaning my tongue."
I get the same.
No, I was doing that in my house, and when I first moved into with my new housemates, and they were like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "I'm cleaning my tongue." They were like,
"Did they not do it?"
I was like,
"You guys seem to have quite good dental hygiene." Like, just
it's our parents. It's our parents who have drummed it into us.
I think it's the parents. Yeah, yeah.
Sure. They brought you up well.
And it's also those adverts. Have you seen those adverts that have recently come out about, like, where the lady's, like, she's bleeding from her mouth, and they're saying, well, you wouldn't ignore it if you were bleeding from any other part of your body. And I was like, oh, my God, that's so true. Like, people neglect dental care. Like, they think, like, they can get away with it.
Definitely.
Yeah, that was quite frightening.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's also because the mouth is quite a hidden place. True. And either people don't notice it, or like they can just hide it quite easily.
You can't hide bad breath though. Bad breath is. Yeah,
it's hard. I mean, with everything being on Zoom these days, like you can easily hide it, can't you?
Oh, and masks as well. Yeah, to be fair, yeah.
I did have a question actually, because we were talking about this coincidentally last night when we were all sat around having dinner, and we were talking about toothpastes and the different types of toothpastes that you get, and obviously you get the ones with the little bits of charcoal in or the little crystals in them, and we were sort of saying, is it good for your teeth to have little bits of either charcoal or whatever in it, or is it bad for your teeth because it's abrasive and it takes away the enamel? And so it can't grow back. Is it good or bad? What do we choose? A clear toothpaste or a toothpaste with bits in it?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Ellie. Referring to the charcoal being really abrasive and that being quite bad. So that will cause like tooth wear, and it will essentially cause sensitivity because you're wearing away the enamel. And so that will make your tooth more sort of vulnerable and sensitive. So, yeah, really recommend do not use those charcoal toothpaste because they don't actually include fluoride in.
So what is the marketing for charcoal toothpaste then? I have seen it advertised, but I didn't see that any benefit compared to other toothpaste. What does it have over?
It's actually kind of, yeah, it's really scary.
Is it the whitening? Like, why... Is it for the whitening effect that they are advertised charcoal?
Yeah, so its whitening effect is due to the abrasion. So it basically like wears off any sort of like stains you have on your teeth. It's basically like rubbing rocks against your teeth. Like, fair enough, like it's going to make it slightly whiter because it gets rid of the stains. But it's really detrimental, and it really shouldn't be on the market at all. I didn't even know how it got to those like supermarket shelves.
That's scary.
Because they're not, yeah, it's not even dentist certified, and they're, yeah, definitely marketed quite a lot, which is quite worrying.
I've seen people brush their teeth on Instagram and stuff with proper charcoal, like pure black toothpaste. So that must be like really bad for your teeth. You know, I don't know if you've seen it, like that pure charcoal that you just rub through and people are like, yeah, it will make my teeth whiter. So that's a definite no-go zone.
Well, with cosmetic...
Yeah, any...
Go on, sorry, quick, go.
Sorry, I was going to say, any friend of yours or any person you know who's rubbing charcoal on their teeth, like, tell them to throw it away.
Yeah, because, like, with cosmetic sort of medicine and dentistry becoming more prominent... It's kind of scary the number of things that are being advertised. Like, for instance, I've seen so many teeth whitening, various companies. Like, it's kind of scary to know whether it's right to whether it's okay, the process in which they're doing the whitening is, or whether it's more, it's causing more detriment than benefit.
Yeah, like the at-home whitening kit is definitely a 10 out of 10, not a recommendation. Because it's essentially like bleach. You're essentially bleaching your teeth. And because your tooth is like a rigid box, and it does actually have blood vessels in it, which is really surprising. Everyone's like, oh, there's blood in, like blood vessels in your teeth. But that's what, that's where the pulp, that's what the pulp is. It's all the blood vessels. And basically what happens is that when you apply like bleach to your tooth, for a like prolonged period period of time, or if you like heat up your tooth, I know that sounds really weird, but you cause like inflammation, because it's a bit of a stress response. You cause this inflammation, but because it's in a rigid box, it can cause the pulp to die, because there's no way of expanding. There's no sort of stretch like you have in your skin, where if you have inflammation, you get like a little red lump and your skin stretches into a bump. You can't do that in your tooth. So that's why it can cause your pulp to die. And then you'll have like essentially a dead tooth, which is not what you want. But that's why at-home bleaching is really, really unsafe, because it's not regulated in terms of its concentration. And also like the time you've left it on for. And I think some like studies have shown that some of the home whitening kits are like way above the normal concentration that we use as dentists, which is actually really scary.
So dangerous.
That's dangerous.
Lots of people bought like home whitening kits and things. So do you use...
Yeah.
Sorry, I've got this whole charcoal thing in my head. So charcoal is no. But what about those toothpastes with little little crystals in them? Does that... I don't know what the crystals are.
Like little bubbles.
Is that good, or is that still no because it's abrasive? So do we go for like a clear toothpaste completely, or are little crystals okay?
So the ones with the little like bubbles in... are normally like the whitening toothpaste. They'll normally have like a little label on it saying like whitening or something. And they'll be whitening because they're slightly more abrasive. So as long as they have fluoride in, and the typical brands like Colgate, Sensodyne, will be absolutely fine to use, because like they're certified by dentists, and also they definitely contain fluoride in. So the main thing you're looking for in a toothpaste is that it contains 1,450 ppm of fluoride, because that's a standard... Well, that's for an adult. That's a standard adult fluoride concentration, which has been found to be effective.
Okay, I will keep an eye out. Thank you.
That's all right.
Yeah, I will now be reading labels of my toothpastes.
Going back to talking about plaque. You know, obviously we want to get rid of majority, but is any form of plaque good, like healthy plaque that we're meant to keep?
Yeah, and actually, like, we do have healthy plaque. And then if you're... say your mouth is more acidic due to sort of like your natural sort of eating habits and your diet. If you have a very acidic diet, your mouth pH might be slightly more acidic, making you more prone to decay. And so that could sort of change a sort of microbiome. Am I allowed to use that word?
Yeah,
like
go for
it. Bacteria. Yeah. The bacteria that live in your mouth, which could potentially make you just normally have slightly more unhealthy biofilm, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. So it's like a balancing act between like the good and the bad. And essentially your oral like routine is to remove majority of the bad and still maintain like a healthy amount. Like good bacteria, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess it's a little bit like having a shower every day. Like you have a shower every day to like keep yourself clean, and like if not, because we all have like healthy bacteria like on our skin, but if we left that for days, like it will get grosser and grosser. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Does anyone want to ask a question? I feel like I've just asked lots.
I was trying to find a way of asking you about baby teeth, because I'm quite intrigued about that. But
you could say something like, we talked about losing teeth. Obviously, when we were younger. Okay. There you go.
Okay. So we talked about losing teeth. But when we're younger, our teeth naturally fall out. So I was just wondering, should we look after our baby teeth, even if they're just going to fall out anyway?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. And yeah, so what's really interesting is that your baby teeth and some adult teeth are already formed and like are sort of waiting underneath the surface of your baby teeth. So if you didn't look after your baby teeth and had an infection, that could then impact like the next tooth below it. But also, if you think about it, like if a child is getting dental decay that young, it means that they're like generally not like taking care of their teeth in general. So they might not be brushing well or brushing at all. And they also might have a very poor diet, let's say, so consisting of like high sugar in their diet, and like that could either just be like lots of like fruit juice, which can be considered quite healthy, because I know a lot of mothers feed their children that like purified like fruit and veg, and like that can be seen as quite healthy, or those like fruit snacks which are actually like really high in sugar. So it can be without, like they can be giving their children like unhealthy or like quite high sugar diets without knowing, which yeah, obviously can be quite detrimental to their dental health. But yeah, so building up these sort of routines early in childhood, so taking them to the dentist really young, and getting them comfortable with the dentist, so they don't develop anxiety, so they actually are going for their regular checkups, is really important, as well as like introducing like good tooth brushing routines, because I mean all of you seem to have great tooth brushing routines, or like dental care in general, and a lot of that is sort of built up from a young age. And I guess that's the same with a lot of our habits. They are formed from a very young age, and they continue through our sort of like adolescence and adulthood, which makes a huge difference to our overall like health later on. So yeah, it is really important to care for your baby teeth, because they're not, just because they're going to fall out doesn't mean like they're not important. Like they are important in terms of like health for the long run as well. For maintaining like your adult dental health.
Is there a correlation between, because what you were saying just then about if you know, try not to develop anxiety around going to the dentist, and from an early age, so people are more likely to get regular checkups and things. Is there a correlation between children who've had bad dental disease at an early age? So obviously they're going to have a worse experience at the dentist. It's going to be more painful, maybe teeth out, that kind of thing. And developing anxiety about going to the dentist in the future. Is that a study that's been done? I don't know.
I think there might be a study on this. But it definitely makes sense as to why, like, some... Well, I know friends that have been scared of the dentist since they were young, and that anxiety continues to live throughout their like adulthood as well, which like generally prevents them from like wanting to go seek or like go to the dentist regularly for checkups, and then only seek dental help when they actually have pain and when they really have to go. That's quite a common thing in dentistry, and quite a common thing we see in patients.
I was just gonna say, I wondered if those people more likely to have had
bad dental problems with their baby teeth or when they were younger, and that's what's made them more nervous, or whether it's just lots of people just generally get nervous about going to the dentist. I don't know. I'll have to look it up, the study that you said.
Yeah, like, so when someone does get dental decay or does need dental treatment, it is quite an invasive, and it is not a nice experience needing any sort of dental treatment, I must say. And that can definitely be like quite a scarring experience for someone and make them almost more anxious about going to the dentist, because then they're like, I'm going to have another filling and another injection, and it can be quite painful. So yeah, I'd say, yeah, it definitely has a knock-on effect.
It's sort of like that white coat syndrome, isn't it? When that's like related with in medicine to like blood pressure or various other,
yeah,
where, you know, people who have notoriously bad blood pressure have that have anxiety when checking their blood pressure, which makes it increase even more.
Exactly.
So it's like it's a never-ending cycle almost.
Yeah, so I think that's why we recommend to do like a home blood pressure monitoring,
yeah,
before we kind of start going down the blood pressure,
I guess. Yeah, I guess with like dental care, it's also quite reliant, it's quite human related in the sense there's a lot of factors that can play a role in your dental care, I guess, more than you realize. Because obviously, if you look at like demographics, you know, poor social economic areas are probably going to have worse dental care, going to seek or let like have less understanding about dental care. And so I guess it's working out a way in which you provide the right knowledge to the people so that they get, so they actually are able to implement it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And like you said, it's really complex because it does, like, it is associated with higher rates in the poor, or like the lower socioeconomic sort of backgrounds. And that's, it's really hard because that's associated with all the other factors, like we've known, like through studies on obesity, like people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds like have higher rates of obesity because of like the dietary factors, like the cheaper diets as well, which also ties into like dental decay, because of like the high sugar diets, and like lack of nutrition, and all of that, like lack of education, all kind of ties in together with it, which makes it quite a complex disease to tackle.
I guess then, how often should a normal person who has no like sort of dental problems be seeing a dentist for checkups? How often should they be going?
So we say every 6 months, and that's pretty standard across like all ages.
Wow.
I didn't think it was that.
That's a lot more often than,
yeah,
I thought
it was like once, yeah, a year. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
fine.
It like not many people actually, like that I know of, actually make their dental checkups like twice a year.
Wow. Okay.
And
fair,
yeah,
enough.
Like I was saying, like most people tend to only go when they actually have pain.
When should they go to the dentist? If not, so you said like usually they go in pain. What other kind of presentations would someone be alerted that, oh, maybe I should go to the dentist and see them and check it out?
So like bleeding gums is also quite a common one. And so that sort of suggests you might have gum disease. But that suggests it could be in the early stages where you can reverse it. But if it progresses, then it's irreversible. But yeah, like bleeding gums is one. And another one would just be sort of aesthetics and like concerns about that. And for children, it will be things like trauma, or if like some like abnormalities, like if a tooth hasn't erupted, like at the time it's meant to, or if maybe like one tooth has erupted but the other one on the other side hasn't, and it's been quite a while, then you sort of suspect things.
When you say bleeding gums,
I remember I actually had to go to the dentist because of my
I think there's a delay, sorry, on my end.
Go on. It's because your video is like paused. Go on. Yeah, there's a...
Yeah. I was
no, no, you go.
Say on. About bleeding gums. Is that bleeding just as when you brush your teeth or bleeding? Because sometimes my gums bleed when I do my teepee brushes, but is that when I'd be like, oh, I need to go to the dentist? Or is it just sporadic bleeding gums or... When do you...
So, so that's quite a common finding. Like, it's when you're brushing in between your teeth, then you're like, oh, my gums are bleeding. And that can either be like, oh, you've accidentally poked your gums too hard, and then you've just caused it to bleed, so a bit of trauma. Or it could actually be something we call like gingivitis, which is inflammation of the gums. And like doing those teepee brushes has like... sort of slightly disturbed it and caused it to bleed because it's already inflamed.
Okay.
And that would have been because of that like plaque there that has sort of caused that inflammation and initiated that like response. So it's definitely reversible in the early stages. So cleaning in between your teeth and getting rid of that plaque. And also it can be induced by sort of like, it's a bit like dental decay where it's quite complex. It's a mixture of like sort of stress, interdental cleaning and tooth brushing, diet, like a few genetic factors as well. It can be like medications. Yeah, it's a combination of loads of things, but altogether that will like, lead to that inflammation, which, yeah, can be why your gums are bleeding.
Yeah, I promise I don't bleed all the time. Just sometimes when I haven't...
That's a good thing. No, that's what you want.
Just sometimes.
Cree diagnoses you with, like, a dental disease, and I'm like, oh, my God.
No,
oh, no.
I use my
teeth
brushes.
No, honestly, don't worry. So pretty much everyone in the population gets gingivitis. Like, pretty much everyone gets it because everyone will, like, miss a spot of cleaning, like, every now and then. We can't always brush our teeth perfectly okay. every single day, but also like we get stressed, like sometimes our diet changes a little bit, like everyone in the population gets gingivitis essentially, but it's about like reversing it and cleaning it well before it actually progresses.
Okay, I'll keep using the brushes. Thank you.
good on you. But yeah, please don't worry about that because that's totally normal.
It's like, oh,
Quee, you'll be soon.
I feel like I'm throwing out like so much information at you guys, and I feel really bad.
No, it's
it's very interesting. Honestly, yeah. this is the very reason because I think it's exactly the purpose of this episode, isn't it? It's the myth constructing busting.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm glad you find it interesting. And...
I think sorry, I had to go to the dentist, because my wisdom teeth were coming out, and I was in a huge amount of pain, and I didn't know what was going on, and I was like, I'm too young and youthful for my wisdom teeth to be coming out, and I was like, oh my God, my wisdom teeth are coming out, so I guess I've never really had explained what the purpose of wisdom teeth were. I wondered if you could tell me, because all I know is that people get them removed eventually. So
yeah, unfortunately, I can't actually tell you the purpose of wisdom teeth. That's still like a big question in the field of dentistry. Like, we don't know why we've got these third molars. It might be sort of like because of our ancestors, like, and they had quite a rogue diet, like, you know, all the cavemen and stuff. I don't know whether I've even got my facts right, but yeah, because of the types of food they ate, like, they might have needed those extra teeth for chewing and chomping.
Oh, okay.
Because that's the function of molars. Mm. But yeah, in this day and age, they are just a pain, and they're really rogue. Like, for some people, they cause absolutely no pain. They don't even erupt. So I haven't got any of my wisdom teeth through. I don't even know whether they're going to come through. We don't know. And for some people, they come through at like really awkward angles. So sometimes they come out like on your cheek side and you're like, how on earth has that even managed?
No, that's exactly what happened. It came out at an angle on one side, not onto my cheek, but like it was pushing on my other teeth, my other molars. And so I was, it was just like this almost sudden amount of pain when I was eating in particular. Oh. And so then I was like, I have to go to the dentist. I can't put this off any longer. I need to go.
And yeah, then people say wisdom teeth. Yeah, people say dental pain is like the worst pain you could experience. It's above childbirth, apparently.
Oh God!
And I think it's because it's so. Oh, I know. Wow. But yeah, I think it's because it's like so localized and focal, and it's yeah because of that it's so painful. It's a bit like, you know, when you stab, you don't normally stab yourself with a pen, or like if you prick yourself with a needle, that is like more painful than, I guess, like slapping yourself. Well, I think it's more painful than slapping yourself. I don't know. But it is a lot more focused and localized, and I think that's why. Sorry, getting back to your like wisdom teeth. Sorry.
I was just, it's my delay, sorry. I was saying it gives you a massive headache as well. I remember when my wisdom teeth came through and it just gives you this huge headache. And I was like, is it a headache or is it wisdom teeth? And it turned out to be a horribly, horribly gammy wisdom tooth. But it was okay.
They are little buggers, aren't they?
I think the thing with the face in terms of, well, the mouth, let's talk about, is there's so many sort of intertwining like blood vessels, nerves in relation to it. So even like anesthetic is quite an interesting process because the places in which you're putting it don't necessarily correlate to where you're going to actually do the procedure.
That is one thing that I could really struggled with. In we do a bit of dentistry and well we do dentistry and veterinary, but the anesthetic blocks of like where you put them and what you're anesthetizing and all the like different things to think about, because yeah, you're right, you don't always put them exactly where you're going to go. You have to sort of think about it a bit more, but yeah, confusing.
Yeah, sort of like a general area, isn't it? And then it sort of anaesthetizes like quite a few nerves. Ellie, I've got a question for you. Like, what kind of dentistry do you do in your degree? And so Ellie's a vet. So yeah, what kind of dentistry do you do? And is the recommendation for animals in terms of their like toothbrushing or oral hygiene routine different from the ones we advise to humans?
Yeah, so we do quite a bit of dentistry actually in veterinary. We have a sort of module on it in our fourth year, and it sort of covers small animals and large animals, so we do horse dentistry as well, and obviously that's a bit different because you've got to think about conformation and if what the horse is used for and racing horses and bits and things like that, so that's like quite different to sort of dog and cat dentistry. So we do common diseases in all of those, so I guess it's kind of pretty similar. So we cover the whole periodontal disease, plaques, taking teeth out, anesthetics, just general treatments, but obviously it's quite different because you just put a, you'd have to put an animal under a GA mainly for dentistry. You don't have to beg them to come to the dentist, do you? Only really do it if there's a problem. So
GA is quite a big procedure, isn't it though?
Yeah, so that's the thing, it has to be a staged procedure with animals. So if you do have this old cat that's about 25 and has terrible teeth, and it needs all of them out for whatever reason, the surgery would end up being so long that you'd have to split it because it's dangerous to keep the cat under for more than 2 hours. So yeah, because it is just so risky and it's quite a big thing. So you would have to have them back on two separate days, which is then obviously another huge issue of talking to the owners. And so they want them back on two separate days and cost of having two general anaesthetics and things. So we do recommend that owners keep an eye on their animal's teeth before it gets to that stage. So if they even have signs of bad breath, you know, worse than normal, bring them to the vet and we can have a look. Trying to nip it in the bud. In terms of teeth brushing and looking after teeth, it is obviously quite different from humans. We don't really floss, I guess. I suppose you could floss. It's not something that we particularly covered very much, but good luck flossing your cat's teeth.
I can imagine it'd be so challenging to try and floss your dog's teeth. I mean,
I don't think that's gonna happen. Brushing your teeth, we do recommend. We recommend getting a child's toothbrush. And if you can, just giving it a quick brush, maybe like once a day or just whenever you can, it's better than not brushing at all. But obviously that depends on what your dog's like, I guess, whether they're going to tolerate that. They say having instead of getting them used to it as a puppy, is more helpful because then they're less averse to having their teeth brushed later in life. So sort of like puppy classes, I think a lot of vets do dental puppy classes and nurse clinics and things, getting your puppy used to teeth brushing. And also those chews, you know, those dental chews and sort of hard food, dry food is quite good because it, a bit like we were saying, it's quite abrasive, so it helps rub off bits of food and stops
yeah,
it lodging.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Lodging into your gummy gaps. So yeah, it's a bit different, but it's much the same principles, I guess, really, as what we've talked about today.
Yeah, oh, that's interesting.
Sorry, I just feel like I talked loads about horse dentistry and that's not what we're here for.
I think it's all really useful. It's a different perspective, isn't it?
Yeah. But I was just saying that a lot of animals' teeth permanently grow, so a lot of it is management and trying to make sure they're eating the right things. And you can even take out their teeth at an early age to stop things like rabbits. Some people take out their incisors because you have to have them trimmed every sort of 6 months or something. So the
stress—oh my gosh, that's amazing!
Yeah. So the stress of putting your poor rabbit through that every 6 months, they sort of say, okay, 1 GA, take out the incisors. That's better. But I think that's a bit of a debate in the exotic animal dentistry world as to whether taking the incisors out is better in the long term, or whether just trimming them every few months is better. So there's a lot to think about and trying to remember it all. but yeah.
I think that's really interesting. So human enamel, so the top layer of your teeth, that basically doesn't grow throughout life. Like once it's formed, it's formed. Like there's no going back. So like once it's damaged, it's damaged. And like that's it. Whereas that's really interesting that in rabbits, I'm guessing it's the enamel that continues to grow. Because if you keep trimming it down, like you'll get sensitivity because of the dentine underneath. But yeah, that's really interesting. And I wonder whether that has like an aspect to maybe like regenerative dentistry.
Queen's thinking up master's projects that she's got. She goes, oh my God.
maybe I shouldn't go back to dentistry this year. Maybe I should do like another intercalation.
Yeah, you should.
Or maybe you convert to the dark side, come to medicine, do Max Facts.
Oh, maybe. Okay. Maybe I'll just rack on another, like, 5-year degree after, like, 2 intercalations. Easy, you know. You know what? My parents were like, are you ever going to graduate? And I'm like, no.
But honestly, I think my parents are at that point already with me.
Fair just enough. Pull another intercalation on them. They'll love it.
Well, fair.
Also, I just wanted to come back quickly to the wisdom teeth. I know this is like quite far back in the conversation, but yeah, I forgot to say, so they used to like routinely extract wisdom teeth because they were like, they cause so much pain and like they're so unpredictable. But then they did a study, like a Cochrane review, and found that there was no sort of evidence or like insufficient evidence to support routine prophylactic removal of these like impacted wisdom teeth. So like the impacted wisdom teeth are the ones that have like come through and could be like pushing on another tooth. And those are the ones that are typically indicated for removal, or like were typically indicated for removal. But they found that actually removing them early didn't actually support any evidence of a beneficial effect, and I guess sometimes they can continue to erupt and actually be positioned in the right place after a long period of pain and time, so they're not routinely removed after the first sort of pain episode, but it's normally if it's like twice or more, I think it's in 6 months or a year that they're then removed.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. So you kind of wait on it and see what's going to happen with the tooth before you decide what to do with it.
Yeah, exactly. And then in the meantime, you basically just advise the patient on like... So you advise them to have like a special brush called a single tufted brush, which is basically this tiny brush which you can use to reach the back of your mouth and your wisdom tooth to just keep it clean. And you typically have like a little flap when it comes through. So when it starts to come through, you have this like flap on top of the tooth coming through, which is your gums. And you basically want to keep cleaning underneath that. Otherwise, like, the plaque will build up under there and you can get decay from it. So, yeah, the first stage is just advising, like, oral hygiene.
Fair. That's really interesting. I guess with oral hygiene, it plays a lot in terms of medicine. It plays a lot into, like, cardiac problems. So I know, like, high arch palates are, like, sort of related to Marfan syndrome, or, like, a sign of Marfan syndrome. Whereas, I like how you smiled there, Kree. That was good confirmation that I remembered stuff.
Yes.
And then, obviously, then you've got infective endocarditis is a big one as well that we're, like, stressed about. Always check the mouth for, like, any signs of infection.
So that's the one that's
Sorry,
go on.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I was about to say, so infective endocarditis is the one that's, like, strongly linked to periodontal disease, which is the gum disease. So that's why we keep stressing about, like, interdental cleaning, because that's typically, like, where the inflammation builds up, or, like, that's the reason why you get inflammation, because of the plaque that isn't cleaned in between your teeth, is linked to that. Yeah. Sorry, what were you going to say, Natasha?
We're always recommended to look at the mouth, look inside the mouth, ask them to stick their tongue out, just have a quick look in all our examinations. It's always part of inspection and the first stage of any examination generally, because you can actually get a lot of signs and symptoms from the mouth. So it's quite interesting how it's all linked together.
And like you were saying, like the mouth is such a hidden place, and things like oral cancer can't actually be diagnosed without actually, like, looking around in the mouth. And it's quite scary because, so during COVID, like, dental clinics were closed, and, like, pretty much most of the referrals for oral cancer comes from dentists. And with the clinics being closed, there was a huge drop in referrals because of that. So there could have been, like, lots of undiagnosed oral cancers, which is really sad, or, like, quite scary. But, yeah.
Fair. I think we've covered quite a lot here. Is there anything else that you'd like to add, Natasha, Kui?
Oh, I was actually, this again goes back a little bit, but it just popped into my brain. Like, in terms of anesthesia and kind of young children, I know that if young children are meant to have kind of any procedure, kind of dental procedure, dental extractions, especially multiple ones, they tend to go under GA, like general anesthesia rather than local anesthesia. Is it all to do with the whole making sure they're comfortable dentists and they don't have traumatic experience when they're younger? Is that generally the reason for that?
Yeah, partially. So we tend to try and hold off GA. So say if they have, like, maybe one tooth that has a bit of decay, mm-hmm. And can be restored, we try to do it, like, under local anaesthetic, because you also do want to, like, get the child used to having dental treatment and experiences. Whereas if you sedate them under GA, like, there is, like, it is a really small risk, but it is a risk that has to be explained. There is a risk of death with GA. But going under GA, like, those children typically have, like, multiple cavities, like, high dental anxiety, so they won't be very compliant. Like, some children that undergo these, like, won't even sit in a dental chair, won't even open their mouths and that kind of thing. But these could also be children that will sit in a chair but just have multiple cavities that need or, like, multiple teeth that need extracting because of all those cavities.
I guess it's like with sedation under GA as well, there's a lot more protocol to go over, although there are benefits, obviously. I think there's that increase in the amount of side effects that you'll suffer, or increased risks, sorry. And like you said, yeah, death is an important one that has to be mentioned with any sort of GA procedure. And obviously with young children, you want to minimise that as much as possible, or with any patient. So I think that's understandable.
Yeah, definitely. But like practically, like GA... Oh, sorry.
Go on.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, practically, like, GA, if you had, like, multiple teeth that need extracting, and teeth, children have, like, very short attention spans, like, they can't sit in the dental chair too long. Like, if you need multiple extractions, like, practically, like, that is more sensible to put them under GA to just get it all done at once than, like, traumatise them with, like, 5-6 appointments of an extraction each time.
I guess it's also
it's kind of like
it's the clinical concept.
It's all balance. Oh, sorry.
Go on.
It's all a balance, isn't it? It's like in any procedure, I think, that we ever do as both as doctors and dentists, I think we'd all find that it's balance of risks and benefits.
Yeah,
and
it's also,
and then you kind of decide it.
It's also about the clinical context, isn't it? And taking it as a case by case, as Kwee said, like what's more practical for the patient. And the situation.
Yeah. It's patient-centered care.
Exactly.
Exactly.
If that's anything that med school or dental school has pushed on us, patient-centered care.
Patient-centered care.
I'm sure the GMC and GDC will be very proud to hear this on the Inspire episode.
I know.
I know, look at that.
Such great standards we're setting. The new generation.
No. Upstanding. Preach it. Upstanding generation.
Well, I think we've covered like a load of different topics, to be quite honest. It's been quite varied, yeah. And you've taught us so much, Kwee. Thank you.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad you found it interesting. I feel like I have chucked like a load of information at you. So if anything does need clarifying, or like if you do have any questions, please do like just drop me a message or something. Be happy to have a chat.
Yeah, so you can email us at the Inspire email, or alternatively, you can wait for our second parter with our hopeful other dental experts to hopefully come.
If you want to get in touch, please email us at inspiredgenopodcast@gmail.com or contact us through our social media. Please like or follow us on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter at inspiredgenopodcast, and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Spotify or any other podcasting platform. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue to bring you the content that you love. The Inspire podcast is brought to you by the Inspire Student Journal. You can visit our journal website at www.inspirestudentjournal.co.uk to find out more. See you next time.
We're students and we're all still learning, so we appreciate any comments, feedback or error corrections in relation to the topics discussed. All research presented is correct at the time of recording. Any medical information provided does not constitute official medical advice. Solve your own physician for any medical issues that you may be experiencing. The views expressed on the Inspire Journal podcast are of the hosts and guests and do not represent the views of the Inspire Student Journal or any institutions we are attached to.